From the soon-to-be chilly studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another overwintering episode of chemical-free horticultural hijinks. You bet your garden. When should you bring tender houseplants indoors? And can you really turn pepper plants into perennials? I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll discuss when to bring houseplants inside, where to position them indoors, and help you turn your pepper plants into small perennial trees. Plus, your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and chronically crafty camaraderie. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up faster than you becoming a four-season grower. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host with the most, Mike McGrath. Now, there won't be an in-the-news segment this week because I want to use that time to hammer down the rules for bringing houseplants indoors for the winter before the weather gets overly chilly. We're calling it bring in your plants, not your pests. Liz in the fabled Egg Harbor section of New Jersey writes, I have several tropical hibiscus that I want to bring into my sunroom for the winter, but I'm afraid that I'll also bring in unwanted pests like whiteflies, spider mites, and mealybugs. Besides giving the plants a good shower with my garden hose, what can you suggest that I spray or add to the soil to prevent infestation? Nothing. No outside inputs are needed here. And quote, a good shower with my garden hose would help the pests, not the plants. Note, almost every technique I'm about to suggest applies to almost every houseplant coming in for the winter. First, don't delay. Warm weather time is ending, and nighttime cold is ready to roll in and severely weaken any tropical plants left outdoors. At least that's generally been the climactic case. Your results will vary. In addition, tropical hibiscus is one of the least cold-hardy plants, so don't roll the dice. It should be the last plant to go outdoors in late spring and the first to come back inside well before chilly nights appear. A light frost would probably kill it, and temperatures below 50 will just make it really unhappy. You're correct to worry about hitchhiking pests, but a shower from a hose would only make them happy. Removing aphids and thrips, which are the most common pests of indoor hibiscus, requires a hose nozzle or handheld sprayer that you can adjust to a deadly laser-like setting to blast the rats off. Be sure to hit the undersides of the leaves where any whiteflies or mealybugs will be hiding. Let the plant sit for a few days if you can, and then do it again, examining both sides of the leaves. If you feel or see something amiss, rub it off with your finger or Q-tip saturated with rubbing alcohol. Take your time and do this well. A little prevention now will be much more effective than trying to come up with a cure later. Once inside, place your hibiscus in the brightest indirect light you can manage that isn't near a poorly insulated window or a hot air source like a heating vent. Then, don't let your plants dry out or drown. If the pot feels light, it's time to water. If it feels heavy, the soil is already saturated. Using a humidifier to counteract the dry indoor air of winter will keep you and your plants happy and make spider mites miserable, as dry air provides their perfect environment. Mist your plants every other day or so to keep them away. And finally, have a bunch of yellow sticky traps handy and place a couple in each pot right away to catch any flying pests that you missed. If the traps start to catch a lot of them, repeat the blasting with sharp streams of water in a tub or shower. Our phone number, 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Bruce, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. This is Bruce in Blacksburg, Virginia, and I'm looking for some advice on taking care of some persistent ground covers.
Oh, all right. Do you know what you got?
Periwinkle, bishop's weed, pachysandra, Virginia creeper, the viney kind.
Did you plant these once ornamentals yourself, or did you inherit this mess?
A little of each.
Okay.
I'm trying to get rid of turf grass, which is generally my enemy.
Oh, well, on the show many times we've talked about doing that, but you don't plant invasives. It is much easier to get rid of turf grass and prepare the surface for raised beds than it is to get rid of ground covers. This is going to be a painful process, no matter what approach we take.
I want to make room for the shrubs and trees so that the ground covers aren't stealing the water in our new drought mode.
That's a good point. I worry more about big trees bullying all the water to themselves. Okay, so what kind of an area are we talking about? Front yard, backyard, square footage? What can you tell me?
It's front yard and back. My landscape is mostly woodland. I've got a little under 2/3 of an acre to play with. Most of that is already under trees or fairly well-established native shrubs. Like I have lots of viburnums and hydrangeas.
Oh, that's great.
And other fun things. But what got me thinking as I was trying to avoid bending over and grabbing plants by the handful was...
Let me stop you right there and remind you of my rule number one. Bending is for chumps. There's a better way to do this.
Well, and you've talked about some things like that, and I had this weird idea of combining some of them. So if I can, I'll run it by you.
You go, man.
Okay. I remember you talking about using rope-a-dope, but using solarizing, which takes a lot of time, and I don't know that I have the patience for, and I have lots of ornamentals that I don't want to solarize in the course of getting rid of the ground cover. So I was wondering, couple stages, if I were to take a string trimmer or in spots
lawnmower. No.
And
whatever
okay. We
do has to affect the root systems. You don't worry about the above ground parts.
Well, here's what I was thinking, because one of the other things you've impressed upon us loyal listeners over the years is don't prune in the fall, because things will grow when they're pruned and the freeze will get them.
Right. But
so what I was thinking
if you
is,
don't,
will be...
Oh, okay, but I think we're going in the same place. If you don't want the plants, prune them now.
Right, and that's where I'm thinking, can I do a couple stages of whacking, you know, down to the dirt flies on these viney ground covers, take a flame weeder to the stuff that's remaining because, well, it's a guy thing, as you've reminded us.
Yeah.
And wait for the freeze to zap the growth that may still come up.
Okay, I'm with you to a large degree. The rope-a-dope tactic is what I'm leaning into here. That's where you have a real problem, like running bamboo that has a tenacious underground root or rhizome system. And the answer is to cut the plants back to the ground and then start mowing that area as soon as you have anything to mow. Now, we're not talking about a normal mower setting of 3 inches. You want it as low as possible. Like, I want to see dirt blowing out the back of the mower. Now, you had a lawn. Do you still have your lawnmower?
Yes.
And can it bag?
Yes.
Excellent. So that's what we're going to do, man. I would start this out back for starters, because nobody's going to see any mistakes or see you mowing every other day. But get out there now. Absolutely. Mow it all to the ground. And mow it. Don't weed whack it. That's going to send plant parts flying all around. And most of these things can root from almost any part. So cut it back. Keep cutting it back, you know, until we get a really hard freeze. And then see what you have in the spring. Now, in the spring, I want you to be prepared with an iron-based herbicide. Iron X is one of the names, but pretty much all of the organic companies and some of the conventional ones now sell this. Iron turns out to be really toxic to plants, but putting some oil, putting some iron on your plants, olive oil, is a help. So hitting live plants with one of these iron solutions really kills the plants, but the leftovers in the soil are good. You want a mineral-rich soil. So not now. Now I want you to start the rope-a-dope. You know, just keep covering your face and backing into the ropes and mow. Like I said, I want to see you achieve the lowest cutting this machine can go down to. And bag up everything. If for some reason stuff is left on the ground, rake it up, sweep it up, vacuum it up, and then wait until you see the barest sight of green. Do it again, until we get to a freeze. Then, as soon as things start to wake up in the spring, you hit them with the iron-based herbicide and be ready to repeat it. I'm going to ballpark and say 2 weeks later, because now the herbicide can go directly to the root system. It doesn't have to contend with a living part of the plant that's, you know, stores a lot of energy. And you should achieve really good success. You may have an area that remains tenacious in the spring. Just keep mowing it and ironing it and put your plants in the other places where you like them. And I want you to collect as many fall leaves as you can this fall and shred them up, because when you put your wanted plants in the ground, you're going to surround them with a 2 to 3 inch mulch of shredded leaves, which has been shown in university studies to be as effective as that horrible dyed black mulch, which is awful for you, your plants, your health, your house, everything. It puts spores into the air like aspergillus that are bad for you. It forms all sorts of nuisance fungi, including one that shoots spores onto the siding of your house. And within 24 hours, it's impossible to remove. They've actually worked their way to the other side of the structure. So,
okay, one question, though.
Okay.
Sometimes some of this ground cover has gotten right up to the stems of some bushes that I'd like to keep. So how can I get, with minimum chump-like bending, get the stuff out that's really under a shrub where the mower won't fit. That's where I was thinking the weed whacker and the flame weeder.
No. Well, the weed whacker is going to spread the plant parts, and a flame weeder is not the best thing for the roots of your wanted plants. So I'm going to say, you know, cut as much off at ground level as you can, and then begin hitting it with iron this season, if you can get a hold of it. Any independent garden center worth its while should have iron-based herbicides. And then, you know, really attack it with the iron in the spring. Because you will have visible plant parts above ground, it won't affect the root system as much. And then when you get it down to, well, when the iron takes effect and the plants begin to die, you want to have some edging handy. Real strong, real thick garden edging. And make yourself a circle around the wanted plant and mulch with shredded leaves out as far as you can. And that should do it. I mean, it's a chore. And this is a warning to everyone who's thinking of a nice ground cover. They don't exist.
Well, and it was such a nice gesture by my neighbor.
Oh.
Who said, wouldn't you like?
Okay. It doesn't matter what follows, wouldn't you like? The default answer is no, thank you. All right, Bruce, we got to go. I hope this helped.
Great. Thanks a lot, Mike. I'll try to get you a progress report sometime.
Please do. I'm interested in these kind of struggles. All right. Bye for now, man.
Say this. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and once again remind everybody out there to be ready to harvest all the fall leaves coming your way, because this essential bounty only arrives once a year, and once those leaves are shredded, they are the essential component in a proper compost pile, and they make a great garden mulch. But don't go shopping for a leaf blower vat just yet, because we'll be right back with important season-changing information and more of your informative phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Thank you to the members of WDIY for making all the programming you hear possible. Becoming a WDIY member is the best way to support your listening and to ensure WDIY will be here for the next person in our community to discover. Make your membership gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 4 or WDIY.org. We couldn't be here without you.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning public affairs programs weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, politics, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. Public Affairs on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it is really possible to take your first year pepper plants and keep them alive over winter, and then put them outside next year where they will fruit for you weeks, perhaps a month ahead of time. It's amazing. Don't miss it. And you won't miss it if you stay with us through some phone calls at 610-694-8100 extension number 3. Allison, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had, Allison. How you doing?
I'm great, and I just wanted to say I'm super excited to talk to you on the phone finally. I've been listening to your show since I was a little kid, and my dad played it in the car on long drives.
So. Oh, God, yeah. I apologize for that. A lot of parents tortured their children with NPR shows.
No, it wasn't so bad. I've gotten a lot of good things out of it.
All right. What can we do for you today?
Well, I wanted to ask you about cutting roots in houseplants. I always see suggestions that if you want to keep your plant in the same size pot or move it to a smaller pot, then you can just trim off like a third of the roots or something like that. And the few times that I've tried it, it's just been a long and torturous way to kill the plant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure that that advice is universal. That just sounds okay. Like even an expert ballparked it rather than go into a detailed explanation, which is why I'm here, because I detail too much. Okay,
great.
Here we go. If you know the name of the houseplant, please search root pruning and then what? Pachysandra, snake plant, whatever.
Okay.
And you should get some reasonable information about whether that's good to do or fatal.
Okay.
I'll tell you my rules. When I pot up my house plants and move them to a bigger container, I roll them out of the pot and then brush off all of the dirt. And I examine the roots carefully. If there's any rotting anywhere in the root system, you want to prune that off completely. When plants...
Do you cut into the live section of the root, or do you want to cut below that?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, a basic rule, whether it's a diseased tree limb or something like that, is go into a little bit of the healthy part to make sure you get it off. But this is not a disease. This is a cultural problem, like opera. but unlike opera, there's a cure for this. And it's don't overwater your houseplants in the winter. Houseplants go dormant in the winter. They're not using a lot of energy. And most people, because they want to be good to their plants, water them much too frequently. For instance, I have a snake plant, also known as mother-in-law's tongue. And I've had that since college. And 1 year, it got lost in a jungle of houseplants and didn't get watered for a year. And it was fine. It's
awesome.
Always easier to rejuvenate a dry plant than to bring a drowned one back to life. So now you got the roots. You're trimming off any rotten parts, and you're going to be sure not to overwater in the future. Again, because the plant's not using the water.
Okay.
And
is there any kind of like aftercare, like anything in particular, like wait to water it or anything like that that you should
do? I'll try and get to that.
Okay.
You also want to look for any roots that are not green and healthy or that look different in a bad way from the other roots and trim those off as well. Sometimes some of the roots will die of old age. So this is a great time to clean it up. But if nothing's wrong and you're putting it in a bigger pot to begin with, leave it alone.
Right. The basic,
almost always valuable garden advice is leave it alone. You know. So
I've learned that well from you.
now we got a healthy root system, and if you see anything you know what? Use fresh potting soil in this case, if you had to trim, just in case there was a disease present.
Okay.
And then put it in its new pot, and it's definitely going to be light now. So put it in a sink with a couple inches of water, leave it alone for an hour or two, lift it out, put it in the drain board until it stops leaking all over the place, and feel the weight of the pot. Okay? That's the weight at which you do not want to water. There's all sorts of these gadgets. Some really stupid advice is if the surface of the soil is dry, water it. No.
Okay.
The roots need to dry out. They don't they don't want to be constantly wet, except for maybe lucky bamboo. So, you know, now you got the well-watered weight of the pot. Put it in its final position. And, you know, if you are a chronic overwaterer, yes, check it every week just to make yourself feel good. But don't water it every week. You want to wait to water until the pot feels light, or you haven't overwatered yet and the plant is looking a little droopy. And then you want to water exactly the same way in the sink. Let it pull up the water through the drainage holes. Now it feels heavy. Let it drain. Put it back into place. Lather, rinse, repeat.
Okay, perfect.
All
I can
right.
do that.
Well, thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the question. You just saved thousands of houseplants.
Excellent. I've done my good deed for the day.
Yeah. Go do another one. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
McGrath here. We have an interesting situation. Do you remember the caller from last week who wanted a ground cover that could survive in the shade of a black walnut tree and not be eaten by deer? Well, that call went really long, so we had to cut it for the show. But here's the rest. I hope you'll find it interesting. Andrea, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to talking with you.
As have I. Not with myself, but with you. Where are you, Andrea?
I live in the Sauerland Mountains, just outside of Hopewell, New Jersey.
Okay. And what can we do for this Jersey girl?
Well, I'm in the process of pretty much doing a complete makeover of most of my gardens because I'm fed up with deer eating everything. Nothing I do, nothing I spray seems to stop them anymore. So I'm digging up a ton of stuff and have to replace it with something else. In particular, one of the gardens is right under a black walnut tree.
Ooh.
So that's another challenge, and by definition, being under a black walnut tree, it's also shady.
Right.
I could use some help on choosing some things to put in that garden as well as some others.
Okay. Well, I have two answers for you. One, it would be a waste of your time, at least half of your time, to cut down the black walnut because the naturally occurring chemical juglone that is toxic to other plants, especially tomatoes, is strongest in the roots. And you'd never get every root out. And if you plant a juglone-sensitive plant and the root systems meet, your good plant will be dead.
Okay. And I should have probably specified that these are flower gardens. It doesn't matter. Oh, I know that. I know that, but in terms of choosing things, I'm looking for flowering plants, perennials.
I'm not going to tell you exactly what to plant. You want me to name your children, too? I'm just going to solve your problem, if that's okay.
Okay.
So when you've got a tree and make it a black walnut tree, there's three problems. The juglone, the shade, and they have a very thirsty root system that makes it difficult for other plants to compete within their root zone, which can go out 150 feet. So my advice in your situation is get some nice black compost and start 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree, and then mulch out a big circle that ends about halfway through the area of shade. It'll look fabulous, and plantings around the roots of trees rarely even survive, much less do well. I mean, think about it. You rarely, if ever, see something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the deer, there are two devices that can save your life here. One is a motion-activated sprinkler. I've been harking about these. I use them in my own garden. It's an impact sprinkler with a motion sensor. And you attach it to an ordinary garden hose, put it up on a stake, and put some batteries in the bottom. And whenever anything comes in and breaks the beam, it spurts, it makes noise, and then it throws a cup of cold water at them.
So
this is nothing deer can adapt to. And if you have this out very early in the season, when the new deer are figuring out their territory and you get them on the first time they come in, they have a mind that imprints that picture. Oh, the house is here. The tree is here. I don't like what happens here. I'll go eat the neighbor's azaleas. The other one, and, you know, it's nice because you're amortizing. You're buying it once, and it's not expensive. The other one is a product called the Wireless Deer Fence. This is a guy, I believe in Ohio, who invented these and sells them directly to gardeners, like out of his garage. What it is about a foot tall green stake that has metal prongs coming out of the top and a little holder for a deer attractant pellet. You want to attract the deer. You want them to come right to your vulnerable plants. So you put 4 batteries in the belly of this beast, which is waterproofed. And no, you don't do that. You put the scent pellet on first. That's the mistake I made when I first got them. I powered it up and then reached in between the prongs. So at least I knew it worked. So again, get these out early in the season. Cold doesn't matter. It's not like you're going to freeze a hose or anything like that. And they're very reasonable. And again, you're amortizing. You're not having to buy sprays or repellents or anything like that. Remarkably effective. And it is the wireless deer fence. And then you plant what you want.
Okay. Except under the walnut tree.
Right. Well, nothing's going to do well there.
Well, do you have time for one more question?
All right, what else you want out of me?
Well, one of the things that I was thinking of putting under the black walnut tree, in fact, directly under it, to sort of fill like a circle around it, is jewelweed.
Yeah, I know jewelweed. It's the reported cure for poison ivy.
Yes, for many things. It has all medicinal uses.
Well, there's nothing special about the plant. But it's full of water. And when you touch poison ivy, you want to treat that with cold water. And jewelweed, you know, is right there, and it'll make you wet. And the answer is no. Jewelweed is a flowering plant. It needs sun. You're following a bad path. Do something decorative instead. Put out some little statues, some little Japanese shrines or a fairy garden or unusual fencing, something that catches the eye but won't die.
Okay, I've read that jewelweed is a shade, can grow in shade.
It's a flowering plant. That's the rule. Plants that flower need sun. plants that only produce leaves can grow in shade.
Oh, that's good.
And you can read anything on the internet. There are no fact checkers. You know, you got to go to reliable sources. Stick with universities and or extension services.
Okay, I'll cross that off the list then.
Yeah, yeah, and don't go there. You know, you can have a nice yard, but get out of your own way.
All right then, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. It was a good call.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Down there, and she'd go out in the evenings and pick her a mess of it.
Well, it's time for me to take another little break and emphasize that fall leaves must be shredded before you can use them in a compost pile or as garden mulch, because whole leaves take years to break down and they smother plants instead of protecting them. But don't go getting ready to receive a year's worth of free mulch and fertilizer just yet, because we'll be right back with important information about keeping your pepper plants alive for several seasons and more of your seasonal phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
Every day for supper time, she'd go down by the truck patch and pick her a mess of poop salad and carry it home in a toast sack.
What do you do with your used potting soil? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, I'll discuss the many ways you can deal with containerized soil that's seen quite a few seasons, plus your seasoned phone calls. That's on the next You Bet Your Garden.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100 or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling edition of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and yes, we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. Stay tuned for a little bit, and I will reveal how your pepper plants can be turned into perennials that take the shape of small trees and bear their tasty fruits a month ahead of newly planted peppers. But first, more of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Harry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to have you here. Harry, how you doing?
Doing well. It's a cool day, and I'm happy to relax a little bit in my study right now.
Very good. Where is it a cool day?
This is in Wallingford, Pennsylvania.
Okay. Yeah, technically, I'm going to call it a suburb of Philadelphia.
You're right.
Okay. All right. So, Harry, in Wallingford, what can I do you for?
Okay, Mike. Well, we have a flowering crabapple that was planted in the front yard near the street where it can be viewed by a lot of people. Now, this past spring, the tree was in beautiful condition. It was covered in lots of white blossoms with pink cores. Mid-end of July, however, the tree started to show signs of deterioration. It looked very, very scrawny. The landscaper that planted it told me that after a year, I really didn't have to do anything to keep it healthy, but apparently that didn't hold.
Okay, so the landscaper's advice was good 10 years ago. Now, with climate change, and I know exactly what kind of conditions you suffered through over this season, that's out the window. Newly planted trees, generally you got to nurse them along for a year. Now, I'm presuming you got long stretches of dry weather, correct?
That's correct. Long stretches of dry weather and very hot, sunny conditions.
Did you water the tree?
Not initially, because I was following the landscaper's recommendation.
Okay. Did you start watering the tree at some point?
I did.
Now, tell me exactly how you water.
Well, my initial plan was I had a spray hose with a nozzle on it, and I would hose the general area for about 3 minutes, I would say, to get the water to soak in. Hopefully, I was told that you don't water exclusively near the trunk of the tree because you want to encourage the roots of the tree to spread out.
That's exactly right. Let me stop you there, because you and many, many others, the majority of gardeners, are watering incorrectly. It takes about 20 minutes for the root system of a tree to even begin taking up water. Probably longer if the soil is really dry and it's trying to keep the water in itself. And of course, low humidity will also make the watering less effective. When you're watering a tree, a new planting, anything like that, take the nozzle off your hose, put it, like as you said, let's say 2 feet out, and set the hose to just drip, 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 like an annoying bathroom faucet. Start it as early in the morning as you can and leave it run for at least 6 hours. A couple of days later, if we're still in a heat wave or anything, do the same thing, but place the hose on either the other side of the tree or as far away from the original as you can. Now, you said it flowered in the spring, and I have one too. I have almost exactly the same situation as you. How does your tree look now? You said it looks kind of skinny and malnourished. Are the leaves discolored? Are there still leaves on the tree?
Yeah, it's looking a little bit better. It has produced some fruits, red fruits, that are very attractive. It still looks a little bit scrawny, but it's survived. Let's put it that way.
Okay. You're the easiest call of the day. Underwatering, severe drought stress, and that fact that the tree is recovering now. So it showed signs of stress, but it didn't die. So you're in good shape right now. Give it a weekly long, slow watering until it gets really cold out. And then in the spring, get on top of it early. I mean, it's important now because this is when the buds are forming. But in the spring, if it starts out dry, I want you to do what I said. And do that every week. We do not get water through the entire season. Really build that puppy back up. And everything should be fine, man.
That all makes sense. So I appreciate this tremendous amount of information you have exposed me to. I think we're going to be in good shape here.
Yes, we are. And we have helped thousands of other gardeners. So you're a prophet.
And I'm
the loss.
Okay. Well, thanks again. Thanks
all right.
Again.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye now.
All right. As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we are calling How to Help Pepper Plants Thrive Over the Winter. Stu in Lambertville, New Jersey writes, I took your advice and brought my pepper plant indoors last fall and put it in a south-facing window. It survived the winter, then I put it back out in May. It had 3 buds at the time, which bloomed and started to become fruit, but the squirrels got 2 of them. My real problem is that it didn't bloom again until the first week in September. It now has 6 buds. What's going on? In a word, Stu, it's climate change. The weather emergencies in many areas this spring and summer were crazy, with some places enduring heavy rain while nearby communities stayed bone dry. But sooner or later, everybody got flooded or battled long droughts, either of which can cause peppers and tomatoes to hit the pause button. It sounds like your weather became, quote, normal enough recently to restart pepper production. Luckily, drought can be battled with more frequent and longer waterings. My rule of 1 inch of water a week only applies to a normal growing season, which we didn't have. In such dry situations, I pretty much double down, watering deeply using a standard impact sprinkler for several hours in the morning every 3 or 4 days, depending on the temperature, humidity, and dew point. Low humidity makes this chore much more difficult. It's tough to give your plants the moisture they crave when bone-dry air sucks it right back out. Watering in the morning before the sun hits your garden can be a big help. An ideal time sequence would be a 5 or 6 a.m. start, ending at 8 or 9. But there ain't much you can do when your neighbors are building arcs. Most plants can recover from 5 or 6 days without rain, but they're going to really struggle if they have to endure the kind of rainstorms that get to be shown on the national news. And climate change has caused more heat and drought, as well as periods of biblical rain. In either case, people growing in raised beds outdoors have a huge advantage, as those beds retain water during dry times and have the essential drainage they need during floods. On the other hand, flat earth gardeners are at a great disadvantage, as their compacted soil can absorb water well, so they suffer more during dry spells and wet spells, too, if the garden becomes cursed with standing water. Anyway, I'm guessing that our Lambertville listener is currently growing his pepper plant in a container, which is good because it makes it easy to move that plant indoors. If you're unfortunate enough to have a pepper planted in the garden proper, wait until the sun goes down to lower any heat stress, and pot it up in a good-sized container filled with a mix of compost and organic potting soil. Not potting soil whose label implies miracles. Then water the container by sitting it in a bathtub, sink, or galvanized tub containing enough water to let the plant hydrate via the container's drainage holes. After an hour or two, lift it out and note the weight of the container. A fully saturated pot should feel at least twice as heavy compared to before it was watered. And going into the future, never water plants that feel heavy. But if it's light, it needs water. Never judge water needs by sticking your finger in the soil or other such nonsense. The weight of the container is better than a moisture meter. Move the saturated pot to a shady spot for a couple of days to prevent transplant shock. Then move it into an area with morning sun and afternoon shade and start checking the nighttime low temperatures in your area. If the 7-day forecast includes any nights in the 40s, bring that plant inside. Same with your house plants. These are tropicals that have no sense of humor about even chilly nights. Bring the containers to a sink or tub and spray every part of the plants with sharp streams of water to remove the unseen aphids that love sucking pepper parts. Wait a couple of hours, then do it again. Then select a proper place indoors that is not a so-called sunny windowsill. Touch that glass on a cold night and you'll know why. Plus, the hours of sunlight are rapidly diminishing and the sun is now at a bad angle for photosynthesis. A true, well-insulated, conservatory-style bay window that faces south or east and that's not near a heat source like a radiator or hot air vent should work well. If your house is seriously dry over the winter, mist your plants with plain water regularly and check the weight every other day. But let's be honest, most people don't have such a perfect place. So locate a spot where you can hang a plant light. Don't use incandescent bulbs because they'll dry things out. A fixture containing two fat 24-inch fluorescent tubes will easily accommodate two plants. Position those plants directly underneath, only an inch or two away from the bulbs. Same with a look-alike LED fixture. Either way, your plants should not only survive the winter, but they might flower and fruit for you indoors. Don't take houseplants and peppers back outside in the spring until nighttime temperatures are reliably in the 50s or warmer. And don't directly feed those evil squirrels or put up a seed feeder for birds. If you do either of those, any future squirrel attacks will be your fault. And now we found the perfect song to accompany our pepper instructions. The artist is Rob Coleman. The song is the Pepper Song. Here we go. Hope you like it.
I like hot peppers. I grow them in my front yard. People say I'm crazy, and maybe I am. But it's shady in the backyard, so I grow them in the front yard, in the middle of the city, here on Bryant Avenue.
Well, that sure was some hopefully helpful information about protecting tender plants, now wasn't it? Luckily, you can check out the details at your leisure or your leisure at the Gardens Alive section of the Gurney's website. Just visit the Gurney's site and click on Garden Resources or type G-U-R-N-E-Y-S plus You Bet Your Garden into your favorite search engine. Yikes, my producer is threatening to leave my begonias out in the cold if I don't get out of the studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100, extension number 3. Or send us your email. You're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse of a question, teeming to our garden shores at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. Whether you call or email, please, please, please include your phone number and location. I'm begging you. You'll find all of our updated contact information, plus a link to our Gardens Alive archive of previous answers and links to our internationally renowned podcast at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You can also follow what's happening at wdiy.org. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the eclectic studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when a mysterious alien protozoa was struck by lightning under a full moon during a meteor shower. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Northleaf. Check out her fine work and find all of our updated contact information at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our peerless prince of profound production is James Ziprote. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our guardian angel is the lovely Jonas Bowen. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be apologizing to my houseplants and peppers for being a little tardy taking them in this season until we meet again next week.